be to share the microphone, so that's going to be one of our...
And we're not going to read our whole script, but we wanted you to know just a little bit about the group and the history before we get right into the pictures. Places, People, and Prayers was the title of our cross-cultural encounter with the Holy Land during the month of May. How did it happen that we went? A college roommate of mine, who is now a professor of New Testament at Eastern Mennonite Seminary, has asked us over the past 17 years to go with her on this annual trip. This year, when she emailed us about the trip, Dwayne said, "Let's just do it." And so we signed up for an experience of a lifetime.
I went for a personal pilgrimage to the Holy Land to see where the land was that Jesus had lived. However, I left greatly impacted by the culture, cultural complexities, and the injustice shown today by the Israeli settlers to the Palestinians.
Speaking of cultural complexities, religious groups included Jews who were Orthodox, conservative, and non-religious. Muslims are both radical and moderate, and Christians are Greek Orthodox, Syrian Orthodox, Catholics, Lutherans, Messianic Jews, and we didn't meet any evangelical Christians. There are very few of them there.
In ethnic groups, they included the Jews, Arabs, and citizenships in the countries of Israel and Palestine. All these groups feel strong attachment to this land of Israel and Palestine, and particularly the space called Jerusalem. There are continually shifting boundaries between the two countries, and Israel makes more and more of their land, takes more and more of their land.
Our group included 16 participants, two leaders from EMS, and that is Kevin Clark and Dorothy Jean Weaver. They lead the group together every other year, and this was Kevin's year to lead. We had a Palestinian Christian tour guide named Tony and a bus driver, Hannah. We ranged in age from 19 to 70 plus, with varying degrees of energy as well.
We hailed from Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, New York, Kansas, and Virginia. We were Presbyterian, United Church of Christ, Methodist, and Mennonite. Seven of us were students, five retirees, and four professionals looking to retire.
We gathered at Dulles Airport on May 4 with an evening departure for Istanbul on Turkish Airlines. We were served two wonderful meals there. And when we arrived at Istanbul Airport, since I was on crutches, I was given a ride on a small, fast-paced cart from one airport gate to another. Dwayne was running, literally, to keep up. When the cart driver realized he was leaving Dwayne behind, he radioed another cart driver, and soon a second cart pulled up, and Dwayne hopped on, and we were off for the ride of our life. We were skillfully maneuvered through the crowd at high speed by two young guys arriving at the gate with hearts pounding from the thrill of the ride.
We arrived in Tel Aviv around 9:30 p.m. 17 of us made it through passport control very quickly, with a friendly welcome to Israel. One of us, Danny Armani, was not so fortunate. With his Arabic last name, he was questioned by one person after another for 4 hours. He was a born U.S. citizen, a Christian from Kansas, but that didn't seem to matter. Finally, he was released to continue the trip with us.
So, at 2 a.m., we finally boarded our bus for the hour ride to Jerusalem. It isn't possible for buses to drive into the walled city because the streets are too narrow. So there was a luggage carrier that had been waiting for us but gave up when we didn't arrive earlier. And so we unloaded all our luggage at the bottom of the hill and climbed a rocky cobblestone street up and walked into this old city. That was our welcome there. Yes, and crutches, and crutches. Fortunately, we had some team members who helped us get our things in. We walked several blocks to St. Mark's Retreat Center in the Christian section of Jerusalem. And finally, by 3:30, we were able to go to sleep.
Our daily schedule, while diverse in what we experienced, was much the same each day. We spent 3 weeks eating breakfast by 7:30 a.m., leaving on the bus by 8 a.m., and traveling all over Israel and Palestine. It is possible to travel from the northern region to the southern region of Palestine, Israel, easily in one day. We had people-to-people conversations with many of the groups previously mentioned. We returned by 5 p.m. and then spent from 6 to 7 together in singing scriptures, reading, prayer, and reflection each day. Dinner was served at 7 p.m., and by 8:45 we were back in our room looking at the day's pictures, doing laundry, and checking out the agenda for the next day.
So, now an outline for the rest of the presentation. Wayne's going to do a very brief history, and then we'll look at some of the main locations we visited in Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Nazareth, and the Mount of Beatitudes. Those were the four places where we stayed. And then also some pictures from Dan, the northern part of Israel to Beersheba. Often in the Bible it refers from Dan to Beersheba. You can see that on your map. We wanted you to each have a map so you could look at this and kind of follow along and talk about the different places. Then we'll do a quick presentation on the places we visited where Jesus lived and walked, kind of a walk through his life. And last, some of the people we met in our people-to-people conversation. So Dwayne, we'll do just a bit on the history.
Going back to 70 AD, when Romans were progressing in their occupation of the Roman Empire, they attacked Palestine, and the Jewish people started migrating, and it's called the Jewish diaspora, which now is a reason why during from like 70 AD up until 1947, or about 1917, very little occupation by the Jews in that region. But in 1918, after World War I, the Ottoman Empire that had the region of Israel, Palestine, was given to. Okay, this clicker is going to go. Was given to Britain as a British colony. They were going to control that particular area, and they decided that this would be a good region for the Palestinians, or for the Israelis, to come back to, and so they were given a small segment. Go to the next map. What you see in white was a segment that was originally given to the Israel, to the Israelis to come back to. In 1947 to 49, after World War II, Israel was established as a nation and recognized by the United Nations, and Jews began returning to Israel from all around the world. Arab nations went to war against Israel and lost. 750,000 Palestinians fled and became refugees. It was called by the Palestinians Al-Nakba, or the meaning of or catastrophe. In 1967, Israel went to war against Arab countries nearby and seized the West Bank and Gaza Strip, setting up military occupation in all of Palestine. There have been ongoing conflicts all over the land, and Israeli settlers coming from the United States and Europe continue to pour into Israel and take more and more land from the Palestinians. This was set up for the promotion of Israelis to return to the homeland was, as Zionists would say, to bring about the coming of the Messiah. So there's a big push, even in our country today, a push to have Israel people, to have Jews move into, back to Israel. And so they are giving incentives for Jews to come back. No employment necessary. They're funding them to come back. They're setting up their houses to live in and giving them a stipend to live on. So that's kind of the way the country is going. And you'll see when they started in 1947, they had approximately 3% of the land. Today in the far right, that picture looks like a little bit of Swiss cheese. Those holes in green are Palestinian. They're shrinking, continuing to shrink. And today, it's all under Israeli military control, and they now occupy close to 85% of the land that was originally there.
All right, so...
There were two other major intifadas or uprising where Palestinian radicals attacked the Israeli settlements, fired missiles into Israel, and Gaza was probably one of the biggest areas that was created some of that intifada. But the response by the Israelis, by the Israeli military, was to invade villages, bomb Palestinian police stations, and building walls to separate Palestinians from the rest of the Israeli country. So right now, around Gaza, it's completely walled in. Nothing goes in or out without control of the Israeli military. They have the Navy is on the seaside, so no transport is going. So if you think about not just living space, but water, electricity, resources, food, everything that is going into Gaza is controlled by the Palestinians, or by the Israelis. It is a prison of sorts. The little green part next to Egypt is Gaza.
And it is the most densely populated place in the world. You can imagine that as more children are born and they can't get out of that space, that's kind of what's happened. Okay, now we'll go on to our trip into Jerusalem. Jerusalem was a beautiful city, just many rocks. Lined streets, the walls built of rock. This was on our way into our St. Mark's Retreat Center. Here Dwayne is in front of the door. And that is the place we were very happy to find at 3 o'clock in the morning. This was our breakfast. This one was a little more elaborate at St. Mark's, but they were always wonderful spreads everywhere we went, always on tablecloth. When we woke up the next morning, this is what we saw outside our balcony window. And we spent some time just sitting on the patio there outside St. Mark's because I was on crutches and having a difficult time getting around. And now we'll just show you some of the views from there.
Jerusalem is also divided into different quadrants between Christian, Jew, Muslim, and these mosques, we did wake to evening prayers at 2 o'clock at once or twice.
Yes. I started knowing when to put earplugs in, like at 3:57. Very similar to here, only much drier.
Yeah. And it depends on which part of the Israel you were in.
So this was a view right from where we were sitting. Lots of activity out. The Jewish quarter was right next to us.
A sign of the Orthodox Jew. Hats, the long garb, regardless of what the weather was like, they were in kind of typical dress. Not uncommon to see the Israeli military, and if you can kind of tell, they're 18, 19 year olds. It's not a volunteer. It's all conscripted. And so they are around everywhere.
They look like kids.
They look like kids with machine guns. But there are other children, too.
This was just out the other direction, right on St. Mark's patio. Many lovely gardens and places to enjoy. This was the street, and you can see the streets are very narrow. The little inclines there are for carts to come down the street. But it was beautiful in Jerusalem. Lots of fabric out for sale, and so it was fun to walk through those streets.
If I were to guess, I would say 95% of the traffic up and down that street were tourists, not Israelis, other than the military that had their presence.
Another?
Inside the shops, all small little areas that were deep, but all along the entire walkway.
I bought a necklace, and this was the man we bought it from, and he, went out and brought tea in for us to drink, and we were there for about an hour. It was kind of a fun time.
Everybody had their sales pitch, even down to how do you spell grand opening. The fruit and vegetable markets along the streets, grocery stores. A shekel is the currency that they have. It's about
3.5 shekels
per dollar. So about 33 cents. So traffic up and down the street, if they needed to bring produce or things like that in, they would have a vehicle, or sometimes there was a hand cart that would go up through.
More of the line of the streets. There are eight or nine gates into Jerusalem.
This
beautiful
is
city.
The Jerusalem wall is high, and there are eight gates into the city, field to.
We sat one day at a little restaurant on the street, and this is all the area right by Jaffa Gate. With a lot of people watching here. I think it's about 750,000. It's not very. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. I'll check. We were talking about that this morning.
There was a young boy just sitting and playing this. It looks like an auto harp, but it's much more complex than that. Each along this set of spindles on the left, there were adjustments that he was making to get different sounds from the strings as he was playing. And it just reminded me of what David playing for Saul must have been like if he had an instrument that he was actually making such great music with.
Another picture of the wall from the outside. Orthodox Jewish family. This is now one of the settlements. This is what it looks like with a wall around. Often the walls are built first. The settlement is built often very close together. You see lots and lots of Israeli flags. I have never been anywhere so many flags for a country. On the cars, in the middle of the street, on all the buildings.
The fencing along the top is to keep the Palestinians out, not the Israelis in.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's everywhere. It is everywhere throughout the area we were in. And usually the houses are built close together, and we didn't hear some people that before they started pouring, the Jews poured in from other parts of the world. The Christians, Jews, Muslims were getting along better. This was like 70, 80 years ago. But now with the newer people coming in from other parts of the world, they don't have that same respect for the people that live there. Just another, you see the flags on the top of that building.
There This is common, and as we drove around, you knew which were the Israeli locations because they would be flying the Israeli flag predominantly everywhere. So we went to the west wall of the temple, or the Wailing Wall. The they have divided it up into men's and women's side. The women's side is increasingly larger than the men's side.
A number of people doing that as part of the prayer.
Their ritual prayers for the for the Orthodox. I did not look for Donald Trump's in the wall there, but
he came after
we did.
A group of school children coming to the wall.
Oh, okay. This is, we saw three places where Herod had palaces. This was right next to the Wailing Wall where excavations were done. And there were excavations being done all over Israel. And you can be glad we're not showing you all the pictures of that.
This is one of the steps into the cleansing pools that they have as a ceremonial washing. This is supposed to be here, the city gate that Jesus would have crossed into. And these rocks are huge. They're mammoth. I just, for the technology of the day when they built this, it's an amazing structure.
It was funny because Kevin had said to us before we left, just please bring one rock back for me from the Holy Land. And I did. I was going to bring it today and forgot. But there are rocks everywhere. I have never seen so much rocky land in my life. But I thought of him many times and said, which stone shall I take back for Kevin?
The city itself is built on top of rubble. And so you've got excavations going down, but there, you know, a civilization would die, be crumbled, they'd build the next one on top of that, and then the next one on top of that. So these areas here show the depiction of the newer construction, newer houses, and then underneath you find the rubble and the excavations of the historical sites below.
This was a very hot day, and I was sitting across from the tree. I had found another shady spot. There were like three tour groups all under the same tree. That's an olive tree. This is an example of the trailers that are moved in for the settlers to live in until their homes are built. So they're right there near the property. And this is just one that hadn't been hauled away yet. We visited the Dome of the Rock and the Temple Haram al-Sharif. This is where, if you've been listening to the news just recently, somebody was killed there. But when you hear about the Temple Mount, this is what it looks like.
It has a gold dome, and these are all mosaics. And it's all beautifully done.
And this is the space that Jews, Christians, Muslims all really value, and you know, some of the end time things that we hear about are to happen at that spot on the Temple Mount. So now we move on to Bethlehem. This is the wall around Bethlehem. You can see the size of the cars at the bottom. And so basically people in Bethlehem cannot get out unless they have permission. It's easier for them to get out than for those in the Gaza Strip. In the Gaza Strip, they basically don't get out at all. But here, they do. In fact, many of them get permission to work outside the wall in Jerusalem and other places. They can't drive cars, but they have permission to work elsewhere. So they leave for the day.
At the entrances, there's a checkpoint that every vehicle that's going. And there are signs up that say, this area is prohibited by the Israelis. No Israeli can go into. So inside the walls of Bethlehem, it's not quite as picturesque as what you would in your mind think about Bethlehem when you think of the biblical stories of But Bethlehem is a city that is has a lot of turmoil, and it's expressed on the inside with what they're feeling.
Those posters are each a story about something that has happened to a Palestinian.
So if you think you've got a tough time going to work, if you live in Bethlehem and you want to get to your job, which you have a permit to work in outside of Bethlehem, you get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and this is what you face. 2 in the morning to open it up at 6 o'clock.
Or 4, 2 to 4, people get there.
To get to work. They cannot drive out of Bethlehem. They have to go through the checkpoint, and a shuttle will meet them on the other side to wherever they're employed.
And sometimes they will open, the Israelis will open 2 turnstiles to get out, sometimes 10. So you never know what they will open. By the Palestinians have authority. If you look at the bottom of one of these pages, I wrote that in. There are 3 areas in Israel and Palestine. The first is the Palestinians have Area A, Palestinians, it looks like this at the bottom, have civil and police control. And that's what Bethlehem is. It's an Area A. B, they have civil control, but the Israelis have military control. And then Area C, Israelis have full military control. Within Israel. So just Bethlehem. The Palestinian Authority has control there, and the Israeli military does not come into Bethlehem, but they man every checkpoint where the people who live in Bethlehem go out from the city.
So there is a police force inside Bethlehem. There's a Palestinian police force.
The Israeli
military.
The military, yes. That's why they can't get out to get to work in the factory. And sometimes, I even saw this one day, they would just stop the turnstile when somebody was in. I was walking through one day, and I got right through, and this woman who was Muslim came right after me, and they stopped it. She was in there and just left it closed for like 15 seconds and then opened it up and she could get on through. And they said that kind of thing happens all the time, just kind of wearing them down so they will want to leave. That's the goal, to get Palestinians to leave the country.
Our trip into Bethlehem, our residence was down this corridor here, so we bus would park up here and let us off and we would walk on down and down through this market square area. And we would be passing all the shops that would be there.
We've heard that many tour groups will not go into Bethlehem just because of fear of what could happen there, but we were never afraid. They were very happy to have a few tourists there to purchase things. No. Our bus could get right through.
It had a... Well, I'm sorry.
This is the view out our window at the retreat center in Bethlehem. We looked right down on the street when the shops opened every morning. This is when they were open. At night, all that was closed up and the doors were pulled down. Other typical street scenes. I don't think so. Some people were out later at night. We never were out after dark. This is where we get the Zatar.
A typical lunch.
On the street.
Lots of pita bread, hummus, fries, falafel. All good lunch.
It was on Manger Square. Lots of cypress. Is that cypress?
Olive wood.
Olive wood, yes. Olive wood, manger scene. This was like lifestyle. What? No.
I should have, but I didn't. It was like, how am I going to get this home? I got a little ornament that's that big. Are we? I thought about it. For those of you who don't know, Tamara and Jennifer make fun of the baby Jesus that we have in our nativity. Okay, this
we, I also, just to clarify, what most people think of a weekend bag was what we spent 30 days in. So we did not have a lot of luggage to bring back a lot of souvenirs. So we had to think about what we wanted to haul and carry every time we stopped by a shop. So necklace is good. Earrings are good.
This was the retreat center where we stayed. It was just beautiful. With the courtyard inside, we sat out here every morning to eat breakfast. And one thing the minister there said, I want the people in our congregation, or the Lutheran Church, to experience beauty. And he said, it's important to experience the arts, creative arts, when you deal with so much pain around you all the time. So they really work to make this space a beautiful spot.
One of his, I think one of the slogans or the things of this area was, that we might have life and have it abundantly. So the situation around was difficult, but what they wanted to experience internally was their abundant life.
Every meal was served with colored napkins. If we were at a place where there were several groups, every group had different colored napkins sitting in glasses so you would know how to sit. Here you can see the linens. Every night, that's what we did. I was not expecting that kind of treatment. We started out with little plates of these side dishes with pita bread, and then moved on into the main meal with something like that. A rice dish. And there's our chef from the Bethlehem Guest House. Here's some of the artwork on the wall.
I like this depiction of the Last Supper. Has a little different feel to it than everybody on one side stretched out across.
And we realize when we talk about the loaves and fishes, it was probably
Peter loaves.
This is Bethlehem Lutheran Church. We worship in two Greek Orthodox churches, and this Sunday was in a Lutheran church. At the bottom right, you see the fellowship hall where they had coffee afterwards. People were on the cell phone. A little girl was arranging flowers in the kitchen.
And if you find reading music interesting, left to right, theirs is from right to left. So everything is from right to left. And at the Bethlehem Bible College, we saw a lot of sculptors and art, but we had a presentation on Christian Zionism and what that has looked like and what are some of the issues that it has created for the
Palestinian Christians. If any of you are interested in reading books on this, we have several books that we would be happy to learn to read as well.
We were not aware, but at the time that we arrived, it was at the celebration of the Nakba, and that is tear gas that was shot. We had experienced it. Some of us that were up front and went into the streets to see what was going on, a peaceful protest down to the gate led by children. The response by the Israeli military was to shoot tear gas into the group. Of course, then followed after that was rock throwing and other things in retaliation for the tear gas. So it's an escalating situation.
We visited Hope School. The interesting thing, the school started by MCC, now locally operated, and they had a poultry barn and raised chickens, and they sold eggs right from the school.
These are known as the Mennonite eggs.
and then some of the scenes from the classroom there. Names, children's names in Arabic.
We had a unique experience of being able to go to a home visit, a Palestinian. Each of us divided up into one or two and went to a homestay. Arthur with a Palestinian, her name was Rida Salim. Mm-hmm.
And I love the flowers. Interestingly, they had pansies, petunias, geraniums, marigolds, the same plants we grow here.
She treated us to a breakfast of pita with, it was kind of like a pizza sort of meal, and her granddaughter helped her. And then she baked them in an oven on the floor, and we enjoyed a delicious breakfast. Now we're moving on to Nazareth. If you look on the map, we're moving up to the northern part of Israel into the Galilean area. Nazareth was like 200 people in the time of Jesus. Now it's a huge city. This was the guest house where we stayed, St. Margaret's. Spent several nights there. No.
Yes,
there was.
Yes, there was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everywhere we went, there was air conditioning.
One of the other things about the areas that we were visiting that were within Palestine was control of water. And so things, basic needs of showering, you wet, lathered, rinsed, and you're done.
And turned the water off in between.
Everything. Was, so these houses, guest houses, while they were nice and accommodating and sleeping, but water was a short supply.
Now we're on to the northern Galilee, right? Close to Sea of Galilee, the Mount of Beatitudes. And this was probably the most beautiful guest house we stayed in. We enjoyed just seeing the birds take a bath here. You'll see them flit in, and they just kept when the fountain was off. Okay. So then on into the guest house. I thought this was kind of a comical no entrance sign, and then a sister there with two dogs. Chapel.
Yeah, that's the Sea of
Galilee. Yeah, the Sea of Galilee is in the back.
They had many different areas around this retreat center that were just kind of like resting, reflecting places.
I had never connected that the Mount of Beatitudes was right next to the Sea of Galilee, because you walk down and there it is. But that's how it is. Every place that we went had these different altar areas or places for pilgrimage groups to meet, and so there were sometimes signs like this, and then we would go in as a group and you could do whatever you wanted. And this was our last morning there. We had communion as a group, and at the end we'll just play a little bit of the music. Our group loved to sing, and the first time we sang, our tour leader said we had never had a group that sang like this group. So we enjoyed that part of our time together a lot. What did you say?
You'll have to judge for yourself.
I missed it. What did she say?
Was that a compliment?
Oh, we didn't say that. Yeah. Okay, we mentioned already that scripture writers spoke about the land of Dan. And Dan was an area that was very green, fast flowing streams. Beersheba to the south was arid and desert like. So, a few pictures from there.
A lot of these areas are under Israel National Park systems. So, every time we went, there were at least some signs for available for what was in the presence of, usually with some kind of historical significance for that particular region or area. This one in particular was Abraham's Well, and it was quite interesting to go up and look down and see the well that was identified or recognized as Abraham's Well.
It was very dramatic, the scenery, as we rode through that.
So on to in the south to the Masada National Park. This was one of Herod's, this is a replica of Herod's palace in the south. And it was a long trek. This is also where in the 70 AD was the last stand for the Jewish nation in the Roman attack. And the Romans encamped around this, and we'll show a picture of that. But the Jewish synagogue, quite present with this Jewish synagogue, always had these places for sitting and columns. That was a quite typical scene for a Jewish synagogue. And then other excavations. It is a huge city on top of a hill, and with a fortress that had very high walls and buttresses. Well, when it rains, it gets green. This is the dry season. It does rain, and it does. The mountains do get green. We saw pictures of it when it all turns green, but then it all dies off and dries up. This is some of the. This is a model here of the part of the palace. This was the bathhouse. This particular area, which is over here, is the steam room. And it's very interesting construction with all the insulated channels along the side that allowed air to go through. Had a suspended floor so that there was heat underneath. There was right here a furnace that kept the whole room hot. And these are actually frescoes that were still present today from that period of time. Where? When? Just a fresco. It's like wallpaper for them. And they would have frescoes and mosaics and tile, and it was quite elaborate. Up at the top of Masada, looking down, you can see the outline of the Roman encampment. And they would stay there. They stayed there for about a year, building the roads and ramparts up to this fortress to have their final battle. It's said that at the Battle of Masada, the Jews committed suicide instead of being captured.
So when
and the slogan of the Israeli military now is that there will not be another Masada.
This is the Dead Sea. You see this looking out from Masada.
Yep.
This is the Bedouin oasis. We stopped on the way back. It's kind of a tourist trap, but it was fun to stop there. We had lunch and tents. You can see the lunch on the right, and then we were entertained with some music by a Bedouin man.
We went outside for our camel ride. So here we are as a group.
Yeah.
This is the best I could do from the camel. So I kind of like the shadow.
So now, if you look on your map, we're heading now towards the Wadi Filth. We're going to Samaria.
And this, I imagine, kind of the story of the Good Samaritan was kind of like this.
It was a long trek down to find the monastery on the side of the mountain. When we got down there, it took, I don't know, 45 minutes or so. It was closed for like 2 hours, and we just couldn't wait that long. So we've made the trip down, took a few pictures, and made the trip back up. I did. Rachel's.
This is another woman, Joan and I, sat at the top. This was our view from the top. You see the monastery in the side of the canyon.
How old is that?
That is the oldest.
I wasn't there.
Well, you read the article. Yeah. You can see this is the route that the donkeys would take. And so if you think of the Samaritan story, this could be, you know, along the side that Jesus was referring to as the person who fell among thieves. So on to the Qumran and the Dead Sea, Scrolls. These are the caves that the scrolls were found in. I forget exactly how many actual caves there were.
Ten, twelve.
A lot of different caves. The Essenes were the writers who were telling the story of the Jewish nation at that time. And they would put their writings into scrolls and then give us. And so that's what they're finding now, and they're interpreting what the scrolls meant. This water collection was a very important part of life there. And so this is an example of one of the cisterns that they had for storing the water that would come during the rainy season. And yes, we did have an experience on the Dead Sea. All the salt, 15 to 20 minutes was what you were, the maximum amount of time that you were supposed to be in there. The person in the back here, people go down and grab mud and put mud on their face. It's supposed to have healing effects. In reality, if you swallow any of that, or you get any of it in your eyes, it can be fatal, because it is fatal. So you make very...
You're sick already. It's
well,
not like... I mean, I got some in my mouth, and I didn't die.
Well,
it did not taste.
They said, don't swallow it.
I tried to swim just for a minute, and you can't do it. It is the strangest thing.
If you think of putting your feet down to stand up, you can't put your feet down to stand up. You have to throw your body forward in order to get that momentum to put your feet down, because you can't just put your feet down.
This was moving. We went up into the Golan Heights. This is looking over into Syria.
So we're in the very northern part now of Israel.
Up headed into there. And they raise lots of cherries here. It's kind of the cherry growing part of Palestine. We stopped and everybody had a bag of cherries.
This is our local tour guide, and Hannah is the driver.
He knew a lot of good.
As you can see, the terrain now is lush, green, flowing water.
Okay, so now we're moving into the part, just a few slides here of the patriarchs, basically their tombs.
And interestingly enough, Abram, Sarah, Isaac, Rebekah, Jacob and Leah, but not Rachel, are buried in this mosque because they are part of their history as well. Women needed to be fully clad, so they furnished us with these robes to wear in. And here is the inside of the mosque with the tombs of Abraham and Sarah.
The recognition of this part of the hallway here was in 2000 something. A doctor from Baruch, a doctor by the name of Baruch Goldstein, who had immigrated from the U.S., came in with his machine gun, killed 29 people in the mosque here. When he was trying to reload, the Muslims surrounded him and actually killed him.
Beat
him to death. As a result of that, the mosque itself was closed for 6 months until repairs and everything could be done. But there were protests outside, a lot more Muslims were killed, and a lot of restrictions then were placed on the Muslims for the attack that they did on that Israeli.
And there was a forced closure of 500 some prisoners in that town.
Okay, so as I said, water is a very important part, so there's a lot of movement of the water from Dan down to the other regions. And this is one of the aqueduct that and water passages that we went through. I don't think so. I think they've rechanneled the water so that this is more of a historical money. Wait a minute. But this opening out here and the steps coming down is where the people of the village would then see how much water is available to them down here to have for the year. Excavations, new excavations are going on all the time. This is their methodology. Quadrant off an area and then give a certain person, an archaeologist, the country, space to go through and start finding whatever they can find in that particular area.
Next, we come to Jacob's Well. Every place that we went that related to a biblical story had a very ornate church that was associated with it as well. And Jacob's Well was no exception. But it actually, supposedly, was the well. And you can still draw water from it. There was a man selling lamps and other trinketry right next to it.
Water that was drawn from the well was bottled and wax topped, and so you could buy that.
Next, this is the Church of St. Anne. St. Anne was considered to be the mother of Mary. And this is inside the chapel where she was being honored. And on in was the front of the church where many groups would come in and sing. We heard Amazing Grace many times in churches. There were groups from Africa, Asia, India, Europe, United States, all making their pilgrimage to many of the places we visited. This is the pool of Bethsaida, where Jesus healed the blind man, fed the 5,000 in this town, and that's where he called Peter, Andrew, and Philip. And these are just some of the remains from there. Now we're moving to Nazareth, where Mary and Joseph lived when Mary became expectant for Jesus being born. We visited the Church of the Ascension. Church of the Annunciation. So every church had artwork that related to that aspect of Jesus' life. Here's the outside of the church. And our tour guide told us story after story at all these places. I just couldn't even keep up. I love this church probably as much as any we were in. And one of the things they did was around the walls, there were depictions of mother and child, Mary and baby Jesus, from all over the world. This is the one from the United States. It was part sculpture, and the metal came from the challenge.
Space shuttle challenger.
There were other, this is just samples from other countries. Ethiopia, I think this, I'm not sure where this one was over here. But all through the entire church were lots of artwork. This is supposedly the spot where the angel came to Mary. And then that is the structure again under the church where Mary is supposedly may have lived. And even if these were not the places, it really did give us an idea of what it could have been like.
The Annunciation for Joseph also was next door to that. Joseph always having perhaps considered a lesser role. He had his angel appeared behind him, and the chapel that he was in a lot of kind of disrepair from what the one to Mary.
They were right next door, because they probably lived close together.
So the depiction of Joseph with Jesus with artwork.
So now we move from Nazareth in the north back down to Bethlehem. Kind of follow it there. This was the Church of the Nativity, and this was such an ornate church. Not this part, this was more like a church. But then you moved over, right next to it was this building that had lots of scaffolding, lots of repair work, just huge chandeliers. And then?
I think it's about 2 years that it's expected for the renovations to be completed.
This little spot, well, here you see people walking down to where the manger was to have been, and that spot that Dwayne just pointed to is supposedly the place where Jesus was born. When we got there, we were being rushed along because the Bishop of Canterbury was there to have mass. And so I got about 2 seconds in front of the manger. There was no sense of being able to worship or anything else, but we were just scurried.
And if there was one place that was considered as birth, there was also a second place, which also had, this was down in the lower regions in the grotto
One of the places I really enjoyed was the shepherd's field. We had time to go out and just reflect in the field, just sitting there, looking out across what could have been the hillside that shepherds were on. And below is a modern group day shepherd. And I wondered why nobody was there. Shepherd's field was just our group. They said, well, the real shepherd's field is down the road, and that's where all the tourists are. But we thought this one was the United States Council. Just envision caves where they could have been. And now on to when Jesus left Bethlehem, and Mary and Joseph with him, remember they went to Egypt, came back, and then went back to Nazareth. So now we're at Nazareth where he grew up. Nazareth Village was created by MCC with involvement from the Mennonite Church. It is now locally operated, but it is a first century village, like a small spot. To kind of show what life in Jesus' day was like.
It was originally thought that this would be a site for a hospital, but instead they created this village, and they found some of the first century things at that in that site. So sorry about that. Okay, so this would have been a typical carpenter, a weaver, a mill, olives with an olive press. They would squeeze the olives, and then the lower, that's where they press out the olive oil. Village wouldn't be a village without a donkey. And the vineyard on the hillside, and then this is the wine press. And right there is the spout to allow the juice to flow down into that cavity. But this was here for women and children to squeeze the grapes because the seeds couldn't, if you tried to, if a man was heavy enough on it, it would break the seeds and would ruin the wine.
So they trampled it with their feet.
A reading in the of the scroll in the synagogue. There's a shepherd watching his sheep. And a meal prepared for us in the tradition of the Mass.
So then we go on to Galilee, which is where Jesus as an adult had most of his ministry. And it's interesting just to read now, like where it said Jesus went into Galilee. Just picture that now. We came to the Jordan River, and here several members of our group wanted to be rebaptized. Carlos said he wanted to just experience everything as much as possible that Jesus experienced. So he was, you know, went under the water Did we?
We didn't. But it was a fee to do that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe our group paid it. Everything was paid ahead of time, so
I think.
What did you say?
I thought the individual did.
Oh, maybe they did. I don't know, because they had to get row.
That's our tour guide.
And he baptized.
He's the seminary chaplain. Priest from now.
This is the Mount of Temptation, and it was just interesting to see signs of places we read about in the Bible, like this is the way to where Jesus was tempted right after baptism. They've made it into a little bit of a tourist trap too, with camel rides. And then we visited a parable house that was created with lots of things that kind of show different stories from Jesus' life. The woman who spoke to us spoke in French, so somebody from our group interpreted.
Okay. This region underneath the village house was what they considered to be a most likely place of how a home would have their animals and manger in the lower regions of the house.
So you could look right now at the animals right next to you. There wasn't a closed wall. Just a few of the things, we won't go through all these, but, you know, the wedding in Cana. That's a wineskin. So the old wineskin makes sense. Then we came to the Mount of Transfiguration, where Jesus was transfigured with Elijah and Moses, pictured in the temple. But the view up here was just beautiful. It's a wide panoramic sort of view.
And this is kind of like a typical day that, as we experience it there.
Blue sky almost every day. I think we had rain maybe. I don't even know if we had rain today.
So looking at the Sea of Galilee.
This is my favorite.
This was not. This region up here was just an outlook, overlook. Yeah.
Tiberias was right there. I don't think this was Tiberias. That was right on the sea coast.
Mm-hmm.
But there were little towns all around the Sea of Galilee. We got to go out and just look.
The water levels had dropped in the Sea of Galilee to the point where one person thought this would be a good time to see what he could find in terms of just looking for new things that could have been found. And they found the first century fishing boat down underneath, and they pulled it up, and each of these boards had been analyzed and found this from all kinds of different trees. And
so we took a tour of the Sea of Galilee on one of these boats. And it was great to just think about Jesus walking on waves here, calming the storm, teaching his followers. And then, even grilling fish on the shore. We stopped at a restaurant to get that. We went to Capernaum, and Capernaum was actually had the largest synagogue in the time of Jesus, and this is the place Jesus chose to do much of his teaching and preaching and performing miracles. So the synagogue still stands, at least partially. This was the church of multiplication where they ate, the Bible says the disciples and the people on the mountain ate and were satisfied.
5 loaves and 2 fishes are in the depiction in the, just in front of the rock in the courtyard.
One of my favorite spots was on the Mount of Beatitudes, and I could just picture the parable of the sower, because there was grain all through the side of the mountain and lots of rocks in the path, and you could just picture the sower went out to sow. Some fell on rocky soil, some fell on good, and there were thorns there too. You can kind of see them in the background. So I can just picture Jesus doing that teaching. Here we are on our way from the top of the mountain down to the Sea of Galilee. So now we're at the end of Jesus' life in Galilee, basically moving to Jerusalem, where, and on the way to Jerusalem was Jericho. He stopped and invited Zacchaeus down from the tree and went to dinner with him. This is supposedly the Zacchaeus tree. See the little shops around the bottom. And then this is the Via Dolorosa, which means the way of suffering. And it includes the traditional 14 stages of the cross along the pathway Jesus took from Pilate's judgment hall to Calvary. And this is where it begins.
There were several groups that were already on pilgrimage. They were carrying the cross. I'm not sure what nationality they were.
But just making that trek. Here's part of our group. And one of the spots that was very memorable to me was this, looking out over Jerusalem and thinking of Jesus making that statement of how I have longed to gather you under my wings, but you're not willing. And just thinking about the turmoil that is still there. But the cemetery, the Jewish cemetery, is there right next to the Via Dolorosa path where Jews are waiting, wanted to be buried there so they can come to life when the Messiah returns. And, it's right along the path where Jesus walked into Jerusalem.
And where Jesus wept, that was kind of memorizing that statement there.
Into the Mount of Olives and Garden of Gethsemane.
These are century-old olive trees.
2,000 years old.
Yeah, millennia.
Chapel right there. And also next to this area was all these are the Lord's Prayer. Yes, in a different language. And it was right next to the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus prayed.
The place signifying where Peter had denied Christ 3 times before the cock crowed. Under Caiaphas's house is a dungeon area, and they explain it, here is the methodology that has been used to put Christ, when he was beaten, before the crown of thorns was put on his head, that he would have been hung with his hands and his legs would have been tied across here when they were doing their lashes. The place of Golgotha, again, there are several places that are thought to be that. There's been some stone falling off of the side here, but they believe that this is, well, one group believes that this is the place of the skull.
Right next to that is a tomb. It was a new tomb hewn out of rock. And this could also possibly be the tomb that Joseph of Arimathea prepared, where Jesus was buried. And here's the empty tomb. But then, the place people think is the real site, probably even more than that one, is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And this just has swarms of people everywhere. Huge high ceilings, again, very ornate, kind of like the Church of the Nativity. Lots of people in the rock over here on the right. They feel may have been the rock that was under the tomb. The people come in and kiss that rock and cry, and you know, it's kind of a time of worship for many people. This is, one of the things that happens here in this building is that many different Christian groups kind of carve out their own place in this building and have their own little sanctuary, kind of like this group right there. But they don't agree with each other and are all afraid that another person is just going to take over more of this building and they're going to lose out. So they have a Muslim family that opens the building every morning and closes it every night because they feel they don't have a vested interest in it. And it's safer than one of them. Claim more of this space. Here is the Holy Sepulchre.
This person would control the flow in and out. If you spent too much time in there, he would hurry you along and shoot you out.
This is, again by the Sea of Galilee after Jesus died and rose again. He came back to Galilee. And this rock is, some people think that's where he gave the Great Commission to his disciples. The priest, there was a priest on that last picture, came up the hill and told us the story about that there were no markers there to say that. And then the Church of the Ascension on Mount of Olives, Jesus came back to Jerusalem before he ascended into heaven. This is kind of like the end of our tour, and you can tell the seniors have been a bit covered with all the remains, and we were finding some spots to relax. On then to the primacy of Peter, where Peter, the early church started, went up around the Sea of Galilee. This is possibly the place, again, where
Jesus said, you are my rock, you are the rock upon this whom I'll build this church, and that is considered the rock that Jesus was referring to.
And the one place that they felt is probably truly authentic is this spot where Peter's house was, because it's seven sites. It's still there. This church is built over the house, but Peter invited people to his home, and that's where the first
looking down into it from the top.
This is along the Mediterranean Sea. This is our last day there. I responded to all the blue water. And it was, again, lots of the excavating was done here.
The Roman aqueduct that was bringing water into the region. You can see at the top here how the channel was open to bringing water down. The hippodrome where they had the chariot racers.
That was really amazing to see that. One horse race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll quickly go through some of the people because I know it's almost 12 o'clock. But these are some of the people we met with. First, we'll show you some of the Muslim people, then Jews, and then Palestinian Christians. We met with Mufti from the Mosque of Omar. He kind of told us about the principles of Islam and some of the rules they follow. We visited a refugee camp where many of the Palestinians living there are Muslim. Some of the priests in the refugee camp. A boy was killed, a young Palestinian, so we saw his pictures many places. 60% of Palestinian children will be put in jail at some point, often for throwing rocks, before they reach adulthood.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A 5-year-old was in jail for 2 days and he cried continuously for his mother, and they finally said, just let him go. This is another point. There is no constitution, rule of law here other than what the military rule is. So it's a, there's no appeal process. They think you're doing something, you're gone.
This is Al-Tawani was a very poor Muslim village. We visited there. They provided lunch for us one day. And the woman here started a craft organization for a group of women there, and they sold things at their place. After lunch, we were given a tour of their property. And when we got out to this part of their land, they noticed, see the place where Dwayne is, that's the
Israeli settlement.
And some settlements are more violent than others, and this is a rather violent one. Children come to school down that road, and the settlers would come out and beat the children on their way to school. So Christian peacemaker teams from the Mennonite Church were there and would walk with the children every day to school. And so they were very shocked to see this pavement going in because it appears now that the road will be paved and they will no longer be able to use it. Probably a wall put up and more settlements built.
The school was also built in violation of the Israeli no construction policy. So they built the school at night, and they did a lot of diversion-type things, but they finally got it built and started running it.
Okay, now people-to-people conversations with the Jews. This was a Jewish woman who came to the mosque many days along with her friends, and they monitored what the military was doing to people who tried to get in the mosque. She said, my own children could be. And they are just children, and we want to make sure they're not doing anything other human beings. So there were people, really, who were Jewish as well. This was Hebron, where she...
Where the mosque was.
Where the mosque was. And this was the street. Notice the netting that's across there, and the Jewish settler flags that are above. And the Jewish settlers moved in.
If you were Palestinian and lived in the above here and you went on vacation, you could come back and you could find an Israeli now occupying it.
So you see the trash over here on the right that was thrown down. They put up netting to keep that out, but there are times that they throw raw food down. And so there are little porches on there.
Again, the idea is this is a Palestinian marketplace, and they're trying to drive those. So and there are fewer tourists coming into this area because of what they would experience. And so eventually they're hoping that they will all just go away. At the end of one of the streets, they put a barricade up so it wouldn't be convenient to leave. But one of the local artists gave his statement that there's still hope.
We went and visited one of the settlements. The woman on the next picture over on the right, what was her name, Effie?
Yeah.
Effie. She talked to us about the settlement, that the area was lush and beautiful, always they wanted their land. And she said the reason they intended to put walls up is to stay the same. And they really don't want to do that, but that is part of what they have needed to do to protect themselves.
She's an immigrant from California with her doctor husband, and she runs has a talk show on the local radio station.
We visited the Yad Vashem Holocaust Museum and take pictures inside. It was a very sobering experience, and we recognized how much the Jews have gone through in this treatment, that they have had all during the Holocaust, and so really it's great for them to have a place to come back to, but it's very sad that they are turning around and treating the Palestinians in the way that they have done. Just, we spent an evening with a synagogue, and afterwards we were invited by Jews into homes and enjoyed the Shabbat meal with them. We could talk on and on about all these places. We visited a kibbutz, the Lavi kibbutz. This is in northern Israel, and Levi showed us around. They began in about the 1930s, came here from Sweden. Let's just flip through these fast. These are some of their homes. He was a little upset they had to move upstairs. As they got older, they needed more space for people. This is their child care with, notice the big buggies on the right. Next is the synagogue where they worship. And then the last picture is the lobby of the hotel where many Jews from around the world come just to stay and visit. Next, with Palestinian Christians, and this woman was from Jean Zaro from the Friends International Center. She's the leader of the Friends Conference in the Middle East and a very inspiring leader. She made a statement that's, if you want to go to the next one. As a Palestinian, I know full well that the people of Israel are not freer than we are. Both Israelis and Palestinians live in fear. Neither Israelis nor Palestinians have peace. Both Israelis and Palestinians yearn for security. No government, no army, no wall, no matter how long and high, will provide for us what can only be supplied by cultivation of mutuality and trust. And surprisingly, all the Christian Palestinians we met there were pacifists. They all believe in following Jesus' way of nonviolence, and they really identified with Jesus as having lived in an occupied land and being suffering just as they are suffering today. This was a Palestinian conflict center. Lucy told us about how they resolve conflict. They believe a conflict is not resolved unless they can sit down and share tea together at the end and feel good about it. So that's the final step in conflict resolution. We visited Sabil, which means the spring of fresh water along the way. Several authors are stationed or live and work at Sabil. Again, we could spend a long time on this. Go ahead to the next one. Just forget that.
Forget that.
No, you can read it, but I just want to.
Okay, this was probably one of the most impactful experiences that we had there. We were to do a work project at the Ten of Nations on the Dahir Nasser farm. Our bus drove in, and we pulled in, and suddenly there was a rock placed in front of the path, and our tour guide had always driven the bus all the way in. So we got out of the bus, and sure enough, here the road was cut off. There was a wall written, built there, and then we looked around that, and this huge wall, see the people at the bottom, was being built. So we got out of the bus. We walked on in, and many of the Palestinians actually have jobs and are employed doing some of these things. You know, they want jobs. So, okay, that Dahir's farm is right there in the middle, and they have had the papers for this place for hundreds of years, so they cannot be moved out of that land. That's often the way the Israeli settlers take the land, because people can't prove with papers that they live there.
We've been in court for 20 years fighting this.
So there are settlements all the way around their little property in the middle, and you can see why they would like to have that property, why the settlers would.
And I believe this road here was cut. This is the one that was cut.
So here's our walk-in. There's another new settlement coming in that our group leaders had not seen before. And as we walk in, there are more settlements all the way around. You can see there the Dahir's vineyards and grape vineyards and olive trees. Another settlement on another spot. When we got to the gate, this was the sign that we saw. We refuse to be enemies. And that's the way they treat everybody. Dahir, the man on the right, had this deep, jolly laugh, a very warm welcome. We came in, and next slide is the vineyard that we cleaned, and I think this was a picture after we were done. So we spent time weeding that. We're given a big meal afterward. There is one building on the property that was built before. Palestinians are told they may not build any structures on their property. So they are not, they put in this restroom, which they really, that was against the rules, but with groups coming in, they needed a place for people to go to the bathroom, and somehow it's still up. But they said if they would leave the property overnight and nobody would stay there, they may come in the next morning and find this torn down.
They have videos of that.
Next picture is caves. They are not allowed to have water brought in, so they collect it on their roof. They cannot have electricity, so they have solar panels. They are not allowed to build, so they go underground in the caves, and they have a bedroom there and worship there. They do not live there all the time. Somebody always stays there, but they have a house, a residence elsewhere.
Water collection and the solar panels are a violation of the Israeli law, so they're looking at eventually coming and ripping those out because they're going to other places.
Since we're home, we heard about one Palestinian village that was very small, and a group in Europe had paid for solar panels for them, and the Israeli army came in and tore them all out. Tore all the solar panels out. So this, just a little bit, if any of you are interested in reading this book, we have it, Bethlehem Besieged, and we've talked a little bit about Mitri Rahab from the retreat center we stayed at in Bethlehem. But he just had, and everybody we met, had such a positive spirit. Go ahead, Lynn.
His experience during the first Intifada was the Israeli army came through and destroyed a lot of the church and the retreat center that was there, and the stained glass windows that were part of their building, the parishioners gathered them up and have turned them into tree ornaments now of angels, and they're selling those. It's a way of saying we're not going to let things be put down by
we will resist. Yeah. We will not fall. Yeah. And this was one of his statements.
At times when we feel like the world is coming to an end, tomorrow our call is not to wait, not to cry, nor to surrender. Rather, our hopeful vision is to go out today into our garden, into our society, and plant our trees. If we don't plant any trees today, there'll be nothing for tomorrow. But if we plant a tree today, there'll be shade for the children to play, there'll be oil to heal the wounds, and there'll be olive branches to wave when peace arrives. He is such a positive person, even though he has so many restrictions. He had speaking engagements, but because of where he lives, he could not, they would not grant him permission to move or to go out of this area.
Although he has in recent years.
Yes, correct. He requests permission.
And everybody that we met kept saying to us, go home and please tell our story, because people in the United States do not believe that this is happening here. And so that's what we want from you. Go back and tell our story. And so that's, we've tried to be a little bit true to that this morning. And the Mennonite Church recently passed a resolution. If you go to the Mennonite Church website, it's on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. I think they do a good job of trying to look at all sides, but just saying we need to support our brothers and sisters in that land and looking toward some sort of solution. So, we're on our way home. This is our group. So, if anybody has any questions, thanks so much for listening. We know we had a long time. So, we love to talk about the trip, so if you ever want to talk one-on-one more.
Annette asked about the highways. There are super highways that are cut through Israel. If you're an Israeli that buys a car, you get a white license plate. If you're a Palestinian and buy a car, you get a yellow license plate. If you're a white license plate driver, you can go on the white, on the
interstates,
the fast. And if you have a yellow license plate, there is a checkpoint at every entrance. You cannot go on to those streets. You know, what used to be a 15-minute drive to your family's house now becomes a 45-minute to an hour drive because you have to avoid these places. And they don't make underpasses and overpasses. They're not there to make it convenient for anyone else. It's strictly moving through an Israeli-occupied privileged land.